It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
You know, it's not... Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Kyle.
James is there. Hey, Bart Bridge hat?
I think so.
Yeah, with the Grass Valley CA patch on it. That's a shout out to Bart Bridge.
Yeah.
Those guys. Jiffy Lube sponsors the program. Salute to Jiffy Lube. Mm-hmm. I'm Kyle James.
All that stuff.
It takes a lot for us to not, the day after a Kings game, it takes a lot for us to not talk about that first.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll dive into the Kings Nuggets matchup to be sure. But news broke this morning out of the NFL that's relevant to the Las Vegas Raiders, who are broadcast on this very radio station.
Yeah, crazy.
We had some insane news that will affect the 49ers defensive coordinator search as well. And if that search ends today, which I'm kind of expecting it to, we will have that breaking news for you right here on ESPN 1320. But the breaking news out of Raiderland is that the Las Vegas Raiders have hired a head coach.
Okay.
73-year-old Super Bowl champion, future Hall of Famer Pete Carroll is who they hired.
Okay, so I think the one thing I'll point out about Pete Carroll is he always looks way younger than his age. So it's possible that he's just a much younger man than, you know, most 73-year-olds.
Here's an insane stat that I always fall back on. One, Pete Carroll is older than Mike Shanahan and Bill Belichick.
Wait, what? Mike Shanahan.
He is older than Mike Shanahan.
What? Mike Shanahan hasn't coached in the NFL for like 14 years.
Mike Shanahan's been 80 since 2006.
Yes. He's had that weathered, like hung out in Chicago in the wind all day,
once?
Every day.
I know. Can you wear a ski mask, Mike? Golly. Yeah, but Pete Carroll's just cooking. And I see Loki Trickster. He is in the chatty house. And salute to everybody in the chatty house. YouTube.com/ESPN1320 and Twitch.tv/ESPN1320. Thank you, everybody, for watching and everybody listening, of course, on 1320 AM. That's where you can find us on the radio dial. And anybody listening on the free Odyssey app or on the podcast, the James Heyman, Kyle Madsen Show, available wherever you get your podcast. It's a podcast version of this program. I see Loki Trickster in the chat like, oh, this is bad news. This isn't good. I think this is a good move for the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
They need to do the thing we talked about with the 49ers, where whoever their next DC is, looks like it's going to be Robert Saleh. They need to be grooming the next one.
Yeah.
So they have a DC in waiting for when Robert Saleh eventually leaves, whether that's for a new head coaching job or whatever. The Raiders need to be doing the same thing with Pete Carroll. I think Pete Carroll can stabilize Las Vegas for a little bit. I don't know how many years he has left as an effective head coach.
Okay.
But if he can bring the winning culture that Antonio Pierce was trying to bring with the experience of being an NFL head coach, I think that can put them in a really good position moving forward. Now, are they going to win a Super Bowl in the next 2 or 3 years? I don't know. I don't think so. But I think what they need, that experience, that stability, he's going to provide it. It's a 3-year deal. There's a 4th year. I believe it's a team option.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is something that they desperately need. And so I'd way rather take a swing with Pete Carroll, and maybe it lowers your ceiling. But in a division with Jim Harbaugh and with Sean Payton and with Andy Reid and with Bo Nix, who looks like a player in his rookie year, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, you need to do something. Outside of, yeah, hey, who are the leftovers from, Mike McCarthy, bring him in, sure. Who's the rando offensive coordinator that we're just going to try and hire? Yeah, bring him in, see how that goes. Like, no, you know what Pete Carroll can do? I'm in on this for the Raiders.
Yeah, he brings stability. He brings, like, a level-headedness to the room. And I think for me, like, again, I don't know if he's going to be highly successful because it's hard to be successful in a situation where the organization makes mistakes all the time, but it looks like they're on the right path. Their GM was a good hire by the consensus around the league, you know, and now you're bringing in a seasoned veteran head coach Now you just need to add the pieces around him to make sure you do have like the next,
no doubt,
the heir apparent. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think he can do. He can, you know, build a program, rebuild a program. He's done it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a hell of a coach.
You're good. Yeah. 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 I'm with you, man. And, I've seen the now Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll have mended fences and Wilson's the name to watch for the Raiders. I get that's frustrating. I see Loki in the chat.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not the Pete Carroll thing. It's the Russell Wilson of it all. That's fine. That's fair. But I think there's worse things you can do for your franchise long term than pairing Russell Wilson with Pete Carroll. I mean, you have to watch Russell Wilson, which, ugh.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do.
Well, but, I mean, he did make it to the playoffs.
Boy, did he. He sure as heck did.
Yeah.
Good hire for the Raiders. The next steps, TBD. But overall, I think hiring Spytek as our GM, I think hiring Pete Carroll as our head coach, that gets adults in the room, and it gives you a good foundation moving forward. We'll see what they do with that foundation. Shifting gears to the Kings,
mm-hmm.
who fell to the Denver Nuggets last night, trailed by 25 points entering the fourth quarter,
mm-hmm.
and only wound up losing by 9, 132-123, the final, at Ball Arena.
They got it all the way down to 5 points.
Yes. I'm workshopping this take.
Okay. Let's workshop it together, Kyle.
Please. No, and understand, this is, I'm fully aware that this might just be loser mentality by me.
Okay.
And I'm ready to be talked off this point.
Okay.
My gut reaction last night, when it got to 50 seconds left and it was the math just wasn't mathing for the Kings, mm-hmm. and the comeback was going to fall short, my gut reaction was, why did they do that? Why? You just, we had a whole conversation, we've had multiple conversations about how many minutes these starters are playing. And you were in a spot where I saw people on King's Twitter, I believe, I'm not going to say names just in case they didn't say this, but I saw people in King's Twitter going, hey, sit the starters, rest them, this one's done, just take the L and go to New York. And instead, it's the Doug Christie mindset that we talked about yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if players can play, they're going to go. This is not, hey, how you feel? If player says thumbs up, you're on the court. And so the Kings, once again, they played De'Aaron Fox 40 minutes.
Oh, second night of a back-to-back at elevation.
Second night of a back-to-back at elevation. After playing 38 plus minutes the night before, 39 minutes for Domantas Sabonis. Those aren't an easy 39 minutes for him ever, much less going against Nikola Jokic. And then 37 minutes for 35-year-old DeMar DeRozan to fall short by 9 points.
Mm-hmm.
And my immediate reaction is, I'd rather have lost by 30 and my dudes all sat the fourth quarter than, hey, they go balls to the wall, bust their ass, play the entire fourth quarter or play a bunch of the fourth quarter to still catch an L.
Okay,
I'd
so
way rather get blown out in that situation and get a little bit of rest in.
Here would be my counterpoint.
Please.
When you play the Memphis Grizzlies,
uh-huh.
you know that it does not matter what the score is, you have got to play the entire 48. And it's a mentality that has been ingrained into them mm-hmm. by Taylor Jenkins. I want that mentality if I'm a coach. Okay. I want every single moment that you can be out there, if there is any chance at all to win a game,
mm-hmm.
we're going to go for it. And sure. I think Doug right now is trying to set a standard that says, look, I don't care that we're on the second night of the back-to-back. We're
sure.
all tired. Mm-hmm. If you don't think that Doug Christie stayed up the whole night, like game planning for that next game, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Like the dude isn't sleeping at all right now. He is so amped up and trying to get wins for this franchise and trying to get them back in the playoff picture mm-hmm. and, you know, keep the thing rolling. Yeah, should you have let off the gas? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it gave you an opportunity to try something new. You gave Doug McDermott an opportunity to come out and play and say, hey, look, Kevin Huerter, for whatever reason, Kevin Huerter is not working as a basketball player right now.
Boy, he sure isn't.
But what if Doug McDermott can play? What if, you know, all this time we talk about the Kings could make a trade and then all of a sudden they still need that eighth, ninth guy?
Yeah, yeah.
What if Doug McDermott is that guy? We're talking about a career 41% shooter from three. We're talking about a guy who can run around the perimeter for 12, 15 minutes a game and can hit shots.
He was a plus 20 in 11 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, he scored 15 points in 11 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He had five threes. Like, I'm not saying that it's the solution, but here is what happened 2 years ago. Oh, well, last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Kings are getting blown out by the Rockets. You put Keon Ellis on the court, and he played out of his mind. And Mike Brown said, okay, you went from a maybe to a yes.
And then back to a maybe.
Well, eventually.
But no, okay, but that, yeah. that feeds my point. Last night was a great opportunity. Great. Doug McDermott got 11 fourth quarter minutes. Devin Carter only played 2.5 minutes. Why not give Devin Carter some burn? Why not give Mason Jones some burn?
Yeah.
Why not? If you're searching for, why not let Kevin Herter play out the fourth quarter? Like, here you go, dude. See if he can knock down a couple of threes and figure it out. For me, there's more potential value in that than playing your starters 40 minutes to lose by a few less points.
No, I get it.
And I understand you're trying to establish a culture. We talk about it all the time. You can't just smoke games, especially when you started 13-19. You got to go try and get every win. But when you start looking at April, May,
mm-hmm.
when you start June, when
Kyle
when, over my skis. No, but when you start looking at getting into April and May, that's all great that you've run your dudes into the ground in pursuit of culture and winning and accountability. But great, now you're going into a 7-game series against a team that has taken the entire regular season to go, okay, we're going to rest guys here, we're going to rest guys there. And you've got a bunch of dudes who have played hundreds of more minutes than your opponent going into that game. And that puts the other fresher team at an advantage, and you've chased a loss in Denver.
I get it. I mean... I just think that there's value to establishing a culture that we're going to play, and this is our brand of sure. basketball, and we're going to keep going.
Right.
And, like, look, Doug played in an era where, again, they played four games in five nights all the time.
Right. And you're playing big minutes in all four of those games.
Yeah, and sure. he comes from an era where, you know, Latrell Sprewell averaged 42 minutes a game. Like, players play. And I think that that's the mentality that a lot of former players have. And, like, look, are you a ball player or are you not? Are you going to go out there and fight through the pain?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to show me that it doesn't matter what the circumstances are? This is who we are, and this is a standard of play. And we're not going to have another game like the Bucks game where we let go of the rope, because mm-hmm. we got another five games on this road trip, and it could, if you do it once, you could do it again in New York. You could do it again if Joel Embiid starts going crazy against Philly. You could do it again against Minnesota or Oklahoma City.
Sure.
I don't want a built-in excuse. You're going to play, and you're going to finish the game. And sometimes I think that it's valuable. Now, I don't want to see it all season long.
Right. You can't. I made the joke during the game, and I'm sure a lot of people did. I didn't see them. When the Kings went down 17, it was like, got them right where they want them.
Yeah.
You can't keep doing that. You can't keep going down 17, 18, 20 points and just going, okay, well, yeah, we'll just come back.
Yeah.
That's not. You can't keep doing it.
But I do know, like, don't hey, they left Aaron in there to shoot, and mm-hmm. he started hitting some shots late.
Did he?
He hit a three late in the game.
One for eight in the fourth quarter.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, well, the one, was it a three?
It was. One for six from beyond the arc.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, at a certain point, like, you gotta ask a guy to get through a slump. And, you know, sometimes that means go out there and play a little bit more. Go out there and play when it's not you and a coach and somebody passing you the ball.
Yeah.
And so, you know, get right in the right way. So, I don't know. You can't keep doing that every single time.
Yeah.
But I also know that, like, if the game is winnable at all and they're playing soft and letting you back in.
Which they did.
You have to make a run at them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay if the run doesn't, you know, eventually result in a W.
Sure.
It's the standard of play that Doug is trying to set.
I will say there was some satisfaction in it for me.
Oh.
A, because it was it became a very interesting game to watch. But B, I follow some Broncos guys who mm-hmm. are also Nuggets guys. And I understand the arrogance when you've been good for a few years, you've won a title, you have Nikola Jokic who might be on his way to his fourth MVP or whatever. I understand it. But they were like, another fourth quarter off for Nikola Jokic. He made that three-quarter court heave because he didn't want to play. Oh, ha, 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 ha. And then he ends up having to not only play the fourth quarter, but play most of the fourth quarter. Jamal Murray played the entire fourth quarter. Like, they had to run their starters back on. I was like, yeah, that's good. I liked that.
No, I like that, too. I like that Doug's like, no.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have to play tonight. And if we're going to lose a game because of a back-to-back and travel and everything else,
sure,
we're going to make this team pay. And I don't know what Denver's schedule looks like if they have another game coming up. But maybe that's what he's trying to do. And then I'd also point out, this road trip is very interesting. It's spaced out really well outside of the first game. And so, like, the Kings, they flew to New York, probably last night. And then once they got to New York, they're going to be in the same hotel for, like, 3 or 4 days. So it's a really good, like, kind of center yourself, get comfortable on the road. They're going to take a plane flight to Philly.
Which is, that got to be, what, like an hour?
Yeah, it's an hour, and actually, I was talking to Chris Biederman about this. It takes like 2 hours to get to the airport, and then the actual flight itself, I think it's 35 minutes. I don't even think it's an hour. But the train is only like an hour and a half, and that's what Biederman does. He just hops on the train to Philly.
Yeah.
And he said it's way easier because you don't have to wait in line. You don't have to go through airport
security.
Yeah,
you don't have to get on a plane.
All that stuff. You don't have to. But, it's interesting the team is not doing that, especially with, the weather out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess. Also from last night, you mentioned Doug McDermott. Goes 5 of 7 from the field, 5 of 6 from 3 in the fourth quarter. It was a big reason the Kings got back into that game. The reason the Kings got back into that game. Is that enough that you start rolling Doug McDermott out on a more regular basis? Is it Doug McDermott ahead of Kevin Huerter? Because I'd give that, look, I would give that a shot right now. Having way less to do with the fact that Doug McDermott hit 5 of 6 in one game, it has way more to do with the fact that, you said it earlier, Kevin Huerter is not working as a basketball player right now. It's not happening. They're running him out for 5 to 8 minutes. He misses a shot or two, and then they take him out, and he's done. Give Doug McDermott that burn.
No, that's where
I'm
at.
Try something different. I mean, it's a easy swap to make.
I think you're heading that way, and I would say the one thing about Doug is that you don't get a lot of the other stuff. Like, throughout his career, he's not a passer. He's not a creator off the dribble.
Yep.
He's not a rebounder. And Huerter does give you some of that other stuff. Again, neither one of them are great defenders.
Yeah.
You're hoping to get by with whatever you're trying to do there. I don't see a reason why not. I mean, Doug McDermott has played very limited minutes in Sacramento. He's averaging 8.6 minutes per game.
Mm-hmm.
He's shooting 44.9% from three on the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at 2.6 attempts per game. And I think you have to start preparing for life after Kevin Huerter.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we all understand that if the Kings are going to make a trade, and this realistically, it has nothing to do with Kevin Huerter as a player.
Mm-hmm.
You add in the element that Kevin Herter's not having a good season and didn't have a great season last year. But just the salary that Kevin Huerter makes is the most easily attached salary that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Trey Lyles both. I mean, sorry to throw guys under the bus, but when you have a $17 million salary and next year you're at $18 million and someone might be able to flip you in another trade as an expiring contract next season, there's value to that.
Sure.
And there's value to Trey Lyles' one-year $8 million contract that ends at this summer. So if you're going to make a move, Kevin Huerter's going to be attached to it. If you're going to make any substantial move, like a lower-level move, okay, maybe you're able to get do a Trey Lyles for Jonas Valanciunas and, throw in Colby Jones or something. Like, those trades can happen. But the big trade that the Kings are looking for, whether it's John Collins or it's Cam Johnson or it's Kyle Kuzma or it's, whatever, the biggest thing is that you're going to have to live without Kevin Huerter anyways. So why not prepare for that right now? Why not get Doug McDermott up to speed? Because, to be honest, they're very similar as players.
Well, and ideally, because, I mean, you mentioned there's different things that, that Herter does a little bit better than McDermott, but not well enough that it's like, oh, he's got to play over him. It just doesn't, Kevin Herter's shot creation is not a an aspect of the Kings offense. Like that, I don't.
Well, not anymore. Not when you're shooting 29.9% from three.
So in an ideal world where the Kings are making these deals, Doug McDermott's like the 11th dude.
Mm-hmm.
And he's playing because somebody's in foul trouble or, I don't know, they're one of 15 from three and they want to try something different. Like he's a changeup. He shouldn't be a regular part of the rotation. But with the way their roster is set now, you've got your starting five, you've got Keon, you have Trey Lyles, and then like you're looking for anything to spell somebody, so not everybody's playing a bajillion minutes.
No, I totally
and I don't think
agree.
And I don't think it's as easy as, well, just give Keon those minutes because now you're down to a 7-person rotation that's going to catch up with you. There need to be 10 minutes of some kind of value.
Mm-hmm.
And if Doug McDermott is going to knock down 40% of however many threes he gets up, whether it's two, whether it's six, whether it's nine, if you're more confident that he is going to put the ball in the basket than you are Kevin Herter, then he needs to be playing whatever minutes Kevin Herter was going to get. It's a no-brainer to me. And like I just said, ideally, you don't need to rely on Doug McDermott at all for any minutes because your roster is deep enough that he's your ninth or tenth guy. But right now, it's not.
Yeah.
It's the reality of where the Kings are at. It's suboptimal, but you have to do something different than continue to roll number nine out on the court.
Yeah.
I think Doug McDermott gave you as good a reason as any to try him instead.
No, I totally agree. And like, look, Doug McDermott throughout his career, I mean, there's a reason why he's called Dougie McBuckets. He literally is a bucket. Mm-hmm. He's a dude that can go out there and score at will at any time. And if you have the pieces around him to support that, then it works. And on a team that Doug Christie wants 40 threes a night, and you got guys who stop taking threes because they're not hitting them,
mm-hmm.
and you got your best three-point shooters average 2.4 and 2.8 per game, that's not good. You need somebody who is willing to come in and fire at any point. And that is exactly what Doug McDermott is.
Yeah, and being able to like catch and shoot off a screen. Like that's not, Keon is a, for the most part, like a spot up 3-point shooter. He's not curling off a dribble handoff the way Doug McDermott did a couple of times last night.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it's a little bit different.
No, totally.
So I, again, this isn't pounding the table for 20 Doug McDermott minutes. And it's not saying he's going to score 15 points every time he plays 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's really clear there's a little bit different dynamic for him right now than there is for Kevin Herter.
No, totally. And like, look, why not? At this point?
That is the perfect question. Like,
and, you know, the reason why you keep playing it out in the fourth quarter against the Denver Nuggets is because why not just happened. That's what just happened. Just like, hey, we got to throw things at the wall. Hey, look, something just stuck. We threw something against the wall, and there it is. It's still on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, okay. Doug McDermott, your turn. I want to see him a couple of games here. And every time you've turned to him, he's done really well. I was surprised when they guaranteed his contract for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know he's a good dude. People like him. He's a very, very, like, behind the scenes, a very likable dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's chill. And he hangs out with everybody. You know, he's a guy that has played with Domas in the past. Like, him and Kevin Herter instantly built a friendship. Like, you're seeing it in the locker room.
Knows exactly what his role is and how to fit in alongside guys like Sabonis and Fox and Monk and DeRozan.
Well, that, and Kyle, he doesn't care.
Exactly.
You paid me to shoot. I'm here to shoot. Go ahead and pass me the ball.
Yep.
Pass it over here. I'm going to shoot.
You're going to shoot it.
There's no hesitation. There's no anything else. And he's shooting 44.9% from three.
Yep.
Like, all right. I'm here for it. You need more three-point shooting? You just stumbled upon it again. It was hiding on your bench.
Yeah. And zooming out again, if there's any other way we can highlight the Kings roster flaws, it's this exact conversation. Like, how do we get more Doug McDermott? I like Doug. Shouldn't be your eighth guy. That's all. I don't know, man. We talked about it yesterday. That was a probably going to be a loss for you in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
They came out flat. We were talking like mid first quarter. Like, this might get out of hand. this is not, they looked a little sluggish, but it was expected. They played about how you thought, and they, I mean, they battled back. You make it a 9-point loss instead. I'm not tripping. I feel the exact same way about that loss as I did about Milwaukee.
Yep. Hey, I got to be honest. I at the last second, my son said, "Hey, we don't have enough drivers for soccer. I need you to drive." So I threw the laptop in the car.
Hell
two,
yeah!
Two phones. Perfect. I was in 45 degree weather, sitting on a cold bench, with a parka on, frozen hands, typing on a keyboard, watching the game on a phone. And I thought, you know what, this is going to be horrible. And the next thing you know, it's like, okay, I can sit here.
Yeah, salute. And, salute for making it interesting.
Yeah, they made it interesting. They made it worthwhile to actually sit there and live tweet and write 6 week thoughts and everything else.
I will say, subscribe to the King's Beat, thekingsbeat.com today, for more from James on that. My big takeaway, my overarching takeaway, Nikola Jokic can hoop.
Oh, man.
He's so case anyone didn't know. You heard it here first. Nikola Jokic, quite a player.
He's so incredibly talented. I don't know how it works. It doesn't make any sense. It does not. You're watching it. It does not make any sense. And then it just, he just happens.
It's completely. Domantas Sabonis had 23 points, 19 rebounds, and 8 assists last night. He had a monster game by every NBA standard. And Nikola Jokic put up 35, 22, and 17 on 19 shots.
And the three-quarter court thing he did. Just
get
like,
out of here, dude.
Like he's a water polo player. Just turns, fires, like, it's what is happening?
Like, what do you do? And honestly, I know what I was saying earlier. It would have been better to just kind of, you know, fold up shop, put your bench guys in, let them get 12 minutes of burn, let your starters rest. The fact that the Kings had anything left after Jokic hit that shot is honestly like, impressive. Very impressive. Because if that had been me, I'd have been like, well, we're done for tonight.
Yep.
What is that? And I thought, I think the Nuggets probably thought the Kings would be done too. Alas, Doug McDermott dragged them back into the game and made it close.
I love it.
De'Aaron Fox had an 85 offensive rating last night.
Oof.
Do you know what Kevin Huerter's offensive rating was last night?
No.
Zero.
Oh, no.
Do you know how hard it is to have a zero? That means the Kings, per 100 possessions that Kevin Huerter was on the court,
in his
last night,
6 minutes,
would have scored 0 points.
They scored 0 points in the 6 minutes he was on the court. That is incredible.
Do you know what his defensive rating was?
I'm going to guess 145.
128. Oh. Kevin Huerter ran a negative 128 last night.
That's just not nice. Now we're just picking on Kevin Huerter.
That's not me. I'm reading box scores.
You're reading box scores.
All right. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders. Jiffy Lube sponsors the show. We'll have more Kings Nuggets coming up. Plus some insanity in the NFL coaching carousel that is expected to end up helping the 49ers. I'll tell you what it is next on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
To no longer leading the NBA in 3 points.
Wasn't that breaking news? Not actually breaking news. Sorry, I know this is a time of year we can't joke about breaking news.
That's true.
What did you say?
Nikola Jokic surpassed Domantas Sabonis in three-point percentage last night.
Okay, so I meant to look this up last night because Domas, with a very rare stinker from three.
What do you got, 2 for 6?
1 for 4, I think.
Oh, 1 for 4.
Yeah, I think so.
So he dropped to 475.
Let me see. Yeah, and one for four last night for Domas, while Jokic went 2 for 3. And the sample size is big enough to be notable, but small enough that a 1 for 4 and a 2 for 3 from each of them can flip those.
Yeah.
What a battle.
Oh, is there someone else who snuck up?
Yeah, hang on.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I'm a goddamn radio professional. What happened? You said somebody else snuck in?
I think somebody else passed him.
What? Hang on. Seasons per game.
Now we're all like,
all right.
Luke Kennard.
Oh, he is. He and Jokic are tied.
The Kennard dog.
At 47 point. This is so funny. So Luke Kennard is shooting 47.9% from three on 4.6 attempts per game.
Mm-hmm.
Jokic is shooting 47.9 from three on 4.3 attempts per game. Luke Kennard is averaging 9.5 points per game. Nikola Jokic is averaging 30.2.
Oh, man. he can do a few other things besides score. Yeah.
Yeah, man. He just...
The Jokic thing is crazy. Like, everything that he does, you're just like, the teardrops over the top.
It's the same thing. I know we kind of had a similar conversation to this the other day, but... and I've got Nikola Jokic nicknames for you here.
Oh, no.
Yeah. but you know how sometimes Patrick Mahomes will... And there are several athletes that do this. I'm just picking Patrick Mahomes because it's relevant. The Chiefs and Bills play this weekend in the AFC title game. He'll do things that are look as though he's playing the game at like half speed.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody else is moving at 50% speed, which gives him the time to stop and adjust his body and throw a left-handed cross-field pass to a wide-open player. And you're like, how did you even see that?
Yeah.
Forget the physical talent to be able to do it. How did you see that?
Or running one way and throwing it underhand, spiral,
right,
15 yards the other way to a wide open, like...
Right. Forget, like I said, toss the physical talent out the window.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see... And then execute it in motion. Like, that is... It looks like a dad playing football with his kids. And...
It's like street, like out on the blacktop. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, go down to the Cadillac and take a right.
Yeah. And he can just mess around because everybody's smaller and slower than him.
Yeah.
But that's how Jokic plays basketball.
It's just so crazy. Like even when he goes in for a rebound, he just kind of like gently nudges everybody out of the way.
Right.
Goes right up for everyone else to like bonk. I just got like it felt like somebody shoved you, but it wasn't. It was just him like moving through the lane like Loch Ness Monster and just like grabs a rebound and throws it back in. What just happened?
It is so rare that Domantas Sabonis puts his shoulder into somebody and they don't take 8 steps backwards. And it just doesn't... He's the only person in the league that just doesn't move. He's just a... I can't figure it out.
Well, the last time
it doesn't look right.
Yeah,
it looks uncoordinated. But it's obviously very coordinated. And you go, oh, he's not athletic, but it's like he very clearly is.
Yes,
on some level, it might not be jumping high, it might not be running fast, but there are athletic movements and things that he does and sees that are just... It's why he might be a 4-time MVP and why he's averaging 30, 13, and 10.
Say that he's shooting. He's averaging 30.2 points. 13.4 rebounds, 10.1 assists. He's averaging a triple-double on this season. And he's shooting 47.9% from three. Like, what he's doing to the game of basketball is just so bizarre. Like, I've said this before. Like, there's a way in which you can kind of trick the advanced metrics, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how Hassan Whiteside figured it out, but Hassan Whiteside had figured out that there's a very specific way for his PER and his like win shares and all that stuff to look absolutely insane compared to what he looks like on the court.
Yeah.
So there's something that I think Jokic has figured out the formula. Like he's got like a whiteboard somewhere with like dry erase markers and he's figured out the formula of how to like just burn advanced statistics.
Yes.
And so that's one aspect to his game. Because, like, advanced statistics-wise, he will go down as probably the greatest player to ever play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you look at the advanced statistics.
I know that it's really hard to say that about a contemporary player.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nostalgia or yes-stalgia tied to Michael Jordan, to Magic Johnson, to...
Wilt.
Wilt, Bill Russell, yeah. Kareem. There's a nostalgia there. And those guys are greats because they're for a lot of it. For me, like those guys are mythic. Mm-hmm. I was 7 when Michael Jordan won his last title. I have a vague memory of that. Like I saw Space Jam in theater. I have vague memories, but I don't grasp Michael Jordan's career the way I grasp like LeBron James's. And it's so hard that in the moment, but you're right, man. Jokic is going to go down as one of the three or five best players to ever play.
And will never get the accolades, even though he keeps winning MVPs. everyone just kind of like they don't believe the MVPs for some reason.
It's like, so weird.
This is a weird era because no NBA player buys the Rudy Gobert Defensive Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. But the MVP, when you watch Jokic play, you just, like, I would love to watch him play every single night. Like, I'm not moving to Denver and I'm not going to, like,
they're going to start the Nuggets beat?
The Nuggets beat. I'm not going to do that. But at the same time, I would love to watch him play more because it's just absolute artwork. It's, you know, like, again, he just, like, grabs the ball, throws a three-quarter court, money.
Cash.
Yeah.
He had a couple of shots like that where he started his shooting motion with his back to the basket.
Yeah.
The awareness of where he is and where everybody else is on the court is just...
Everything is a little tiny bit of a fall away. Mm-hmm. And you can't get around it. Like, he's so big. Mm-hmm. You can't, like, invade his space.
Nope.
He's just so talented. And I'm surprised that Doug didn't try Alex Len on him a little bit last night.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this, too. The last time these two teams played, Jokic wanted no part of Sabonis.
Yeah.
Sabonis
got cooked.
Just kept, like, running at him and mm-hmm. then, like, getting into his body and being super physical. Mm-hmm. And Jokic just like, all right, dude, if that's how we're playing tonight, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
But in this game, I thought Jokic stood up and was just incredible.
I mean, we knew going in it would be an awesome battle. And then just down the stretch, he just goes and plants his ass right in front of the restricted section or the restricted area and gets the ball down low. And he's either going to get fouled or he's getting a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the offense down the stretch. Like, man, what a freaking player.
Yeah, it's just almost impossible to stop him. And someone in the chat asked if I just compared Jokic to Hassan Whiteside. Just so people know, the year before he came to Sacramento, Hassan Whiteside had a PER of 25. 25. That's like elite all-star PER.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's... So, yeah, there is a way... I'm not saying that they're similar in players because Jokic is just like...
Whiteside did a lot of his with defense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, offensive win shares that year, 5.6 for Whiteside in his 1 year in Portland. Mm-hmm. And his defensive win shares were 3.0 for an 8.5. Mm-hmm. Guarantee you win shares top three or four in the league that year. That's how high that is.
8.5 is a
crazy win share number.
Significant win share number.
So if you can tell me how, you know, again, like Hassan Whiteside, he cooked the advanced statistics.
So Hassan Whiteside was 8.5 that year?
Yeah.
And like you said, did you note what Jokic's win shares were last year?
Like 14 or 13.0?
17.
17.
Double that.
Okay. But who was second and who was fourth?
I have no idea.
Because I'm going to guarantee you get down to like who's fourth in the league and Whiteside was right there.
No. I was talking about 23-24.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Jokic had a win share 17.
Yeah, I was just saying like though, for example, though, what are the win shares of the people around him? And
I see what you got. Yeah, you. Okay, I misunderstood.
Yeah, even last year's win shares for the season, again, we're looking at an 8.5, right? Where are win shares? Win shares.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander this year. Hey, win shares. Nikola Jokic, 9.7. Shai, 9.6.
Oh.
And then Domas is tied with Karl Anthony Towns for third at 7.0.
So last season, win shares, LeBron was number 17 in the league at 8.5, tied with Derek White. So Hassan Whiteside would have tied LeBron if he was like in win shares. That's how crazy he was able to cook the advanced statistics.
Jeez.
And so when the Kings are like, hey, we're going to sign Hassan Whiteside, it's like, I don't think that's a good idea. And then you look at the advanced stats, you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. And then you watch him play and you're like, okay. It wasn't a good idea, and that didn't make any sense, but there it is.
Yeah. Insanity in the NFL head coaching carousel. There's some other King stuff I want to get to, but I also... Yeah. Yesterday was a wild-ass day in the NFL coaching ranks. So here's the kind of condensed version. I'm going to leave out some of the gritty details of Liam Cohen, who was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator, who was going to have a second interview with the Jaguars, but turned down that interview and then wound up going back secretly for and at some point in there, he lied about his kid being sick.
Oh, no.
And said he was at the hospital with his kid or at the doctor with his kid, and that's why the Buccaneers couldn't get a hold of him. So, yesterday, Liam Cohn turned down a second interview with the Jaguars that was supposed to happen. On Wednesday, he turned down a second interview with the Jaguars.
And that's when we were like, oh, no. The Niners are going to lose Robert Saleh.
Right.
And Shanahan doesn't have a plan B. And this is a horrible mess.
Correct.
So.
And it would have been.
Yep.
So Liam Cohn, who is the number one option for the Jags, backs out of the running. Says, I'm going back to Tampa Bay on the highest contract ever signed for an offensive coordinator. Yesterday morning, it breaks that, wait, it's not just Robert Saleh and Patrick Graham, the Raiders defensive coordinator, who are going to have second interviews. The Jags are waiting on the playoffs to shake out because they want to interview some of the coaches on the staffs that are still currently playing.
Okay.
So I'm going, man, this Niners DC thing is going to take like into mid-February. Like, oh my God, everybody buckle up. Yesterday afternoon, we find out that Liam Cohn, well, Thursday, Trent Baalke gets fired.
Yep. The general manager.
The general manager. That was Wednesday. Thursday, we find out. Sorry, my days are all messed up. Wednesday, Trent Baalke gets fired, the general manager that Liam Cohn didn't want to work with. Yesterday, we find out that Liam Cohn actually is having a second interview with the Jaguars, but it happened in secret because his record-setting offensive coordinator deal with Tampa Bay was contingent upon him not getting a second interview with the Jags.
Oh.
So he met with them in secret, and when they were trying to get a hold of him to be like, hey, we got this contract, can you come sign it? He's like, I'm at the doctor with my kid who's sick. I can't come in. When actually he was meeting with the Jaguars about becoming their new head coach.
And meanwhile, Robert Saleh is supposed to fly to Jacksonville.
Correct.
For his second interview.
Right.
Catches wind of this.
Yes.
I said, I ain't going.
Here's the other deal that Albert Breer pointed out today on Sports Illustrated. While all of this is going on with Liam Cohn meeting with Jags ownership and trying to hammer out this deal, this secret deal to make him their next head coach, the Jags still had Raiders defensive coordinator Patrick Graham fly out for his second interview, interviewed him to be their head coach so they could satisfy the Rooney Rule, and still made him fly to Jacksonville and still interviewed him, even though they were working out a head coaching deal with Liam Cohn while he was doing his interview.
Oh, that's complicated. That's not a good look.
It's horrible.
Yeah, that's not. So you do know that something similar to this happened with Sacramento Kings, right?
I don't. Real quick,
go ahead.
I want to get to when it happened to the Kings. So Cohen last night, yesterday afternoon, all that breaks. Last night, it comes down from multiple people. I think Jeff Howe from The Athletic was the first person that I saw reported that Liam Cohen had informed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that he was leaving and informed the Jags that he was taking their head coaching job. This opens the door to a report from Matt Maiocco, who said if Robert Saleh doesn't get a head coaching job, he's told the 49ers he's going to be their defensive coordinator. He won't go anywhere else. If he's not a head coach, he's the Niners DC. The Jags appeared to be the only job that he was really in the running for. Mm-hmm. Ergo, it looks like Robert Saleh is going to be the 49ers defensive coordinator. Mike Silver from, is he with The Athletic now? I think he's with The Athletic. Reported that he was, not really a report, he said he expected Robert Saleh to be the Niners DC, but everybody kind of did. So we're kind of waiting on that news to happen. What an insane roller coaster. And it looks like it all shook out the right way for the 49ers.
Well, that, I mean, in the end, that's all that matters. If they're going to get Saleh, that's all that matters.
Yep.
They really, really need to shore up that position. They need to get somebody. And hopefully he'll be there for more than 1 year. I'm going to guess it's one, maybe 2 years, and he'll get another opportunity, but that's if the 49ers fix everything defensively. Yep. Now, this did happen with the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, boy.
Of
course it did. Why would it not? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Stan Van Gundy flew all the way out to Sacramento. Him and his wife were hanging out with the Kings.
What year is this?
I want to say it's right before they signed, they hired Paul Westphal. So 2009, 2010 season.
This is post his run with the Magic.
Yes. Oh, no, it's not, because that's what happens. So,
oh, spoiler alert, everybody.
Stan Van Gundy comes to Sacramento, and he works out, he's working out a contract with the Kings. He's going to become the head coach of the Kings. Him and his wife say, hey, is it okay if we go, before we finalize things, can we go sit down? We're going to go have lunch and just talk things over, make sure Sacramento is like where we want to be and everything mm-hmm. else. And they say, okay, no problem. Him and his wife leave. They end up going to Kinko's in downtown Sacramento, where the Orlando Magic send him a contract. He signs the contract, has it scanned and sent back to the Orlando Magic while he's at Kinko's in Sacramento.
At dinner.
Having a lunch with his wife, trying to make a final decision. And left the Kings at the altar. I've actually been in a scrum where we've asked him about this, and he will tell you to this day, worst, most embarrassing move of his career, that it was unprofessional, and he apologized profusely, and it should not have gone down that way. But, you know, in the moment, it was like, okay, I need to get this deal done.
Yeah.
And that's, he goes to the Orlando Magic and got paid, and the Kings were fully left at the altar.
Oh, so, my God.
So it did happen. These things happen, but
there's just, and this has been the big debate in NFL circles, is like, who's in the wrong here? Because Liam Cohen's thing is, well, the Buccaneers tried to strong arm me into this contract. I hadn't signed anything. I wasn't committed to anything. I was kind of doing what's best for me. The same way, if they wanted to move on from me, I would be fired. There would be no consideration for my feelings and my family and all that. And the Buccaneers argument is, why didn't you just tell us?
Mm.
Like, why did you sneak around? And Cohen saying, because you made my contract, my record-setting contract, contingent on not doing this.
Yeah.
Which he thinks is messed up. The Buccaneers are saying it's messed up. If I'm the Jaguars, maybe this all works out.
Yep.
Because two of the things they told him, according to reporting, is that he'll get Ben Johnson money, mm-hmm. $13 million plus a year, and he'll get to choose his GM.
Oh, man.
And if the Jags go from this point forward, let him choose his GM, assuming he chooses a guy that he wants to work with and can work with and all that, and then Shad Khan and that's the Jags owner, they get out of the way and they let him cook, they might be in an okay spot. But this is a really bad foot to get off on.
I don't know how you figure this out. And not only that, when this job is done for him, mm-hmm. what does he look like to the rest of the league? Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. You don't want to be that guy, especially for a young guy. At least Stan Van Gundy was established as an NBA head coach when this happened in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. It still was a bad look. But the fact that he's an established coach and was going to, you know, he'll coach. If he mm-hmm. wanted to get back in the game, he'd find a job, no problem.
Sure.
So, but for this, for a young guy, for his offensive coordinator, I know it's about like the right fit and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
but you have to be super cautious with what you look like on the outside.
Yeah. Oh, and, for sure.
Yeah. Because if this does not go well in Jacksonville, and I don't think any of us think that it's guaranteed to go well,
mm-hmm.
It could, you know, really, really come back to bite him in 2 years when he's back on the market and looking for another job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look it up. The worm turned on Josh McDaniels. McDaniels? McDaniel? McDaniels? Josh McDaniels. That's right. When he took the Colts job and then went, hey, never mind.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, they were ready to hire him. They were ready to have a press conference, all that. And then he went, nah, never mind. I'm going to go back to the Patriots. And then everybody kind of looked at him a little different. And then he went and didn't have any success with the Raiders and now will never be a head coach again. But that stuff matters, man.
Now he's back with the Patriots.
I see G-Money01 in the chatty house saying it's called negotiation. That's what the contingency was with the Bucks. It's like, that's not a negotiation.
That's what the kids on the street are calling it.
That's not negotiating, saying, hey, take this deal, but you can't do X, Y, and Z. That's not, that's telling somebody something.
Yeah. I agree.
If I'm Liam Cohen, I'm calling the Bucks and going, hey, here's what's going on. I'm not lying and saying I'm with my sick kid when actually I'm interviewing for a head coaching job that I'm not supposed to be interviewing for per the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
But he wasn't under contract. He hadn't signed anything yet. So it sucks, but it's not like you did anything illegal.
No, that's true.
Ah, I don't like his face. That's what bothers me about him. It's like all of this, and there's just something kind of skeezy about his face. He looks like a Disney villain.
But at the end of the day, if it yields you, Robert Saleh, then you got to be excited about
it. Niners don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
They couldn't give a damn.
Well, that, and as someone who is a 49ers fan, I would much rather have Robert Saleh than not have Robert Saleh.
Yeah, 1,000%.
And so I'm very excited for this turn of events with some evil villain.
Just an instant. I had a thing ready at NinersWire.com about how this could take into mid-February and this could like really get bad if they don't land Saleh. Now all of a sudden it's nearly March and they don't have a DC. And I'm like, I had this whole thing. And then by the time I got home, he's interviewing again with the Jags, and he's taking, he's like, oh my God.
What in the world? Life comes at you fast, Kyle.
No shortage of drama. I feel like every league now. The drama and the intrigue is in the offseason, and it is in the off-court stuff.
How many pieces per year do you write that never, ever get published?
Not that many.
No?
Probably 15.
15 total ever, or 15 a year?
Not 15. Yeah, no, not 15 a year. That's too many. Probably 10.
Yeah, 10.
It depends. If they were looking for a head coach,
mm-hmm.
Or I'll have before the draft, I'll have probably 8 or 10 things written about different prospects that they could draft, just getting ready. But it's not typical that something like that happens.
Okay.
I have the Saleh hire draft is in my drafts right now. I expect that to get published.
Totally. Totally.
But
yeah, I know my bosses made me pre-write Luke Walton getting fired, and it sat there for 6 months. And then finally it was like, hey, I think I got to clean that thing up real quick and change
some
dates.
Right. Yeah. Change the dates, change the numbers. That was the, when I pre-wrote, I'll finish the story in a second. The Nick Bosa contract, that was another one that I had pre-written. That had to get dramatically changed dates and like, hey, they've got it done finally. And like, had to go in during training camp, but like, it took X amount of time. And then the entire tenor of the story changed. Like, Nick Bosa's finally here. They have a game next week. What a mess.
Yeah. And he's making $37 million.
Hey. all right. We'll revisit our keys from last night. We'll dive back into the Kings' loss to the Nuggets, and we'll look ahead to the rest of their road trip. And then the All-Star starters were announced yesterday. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about what's next in the All-Star voting process. All that jazz coming up in the second hour right here on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.